do a podcast, so I like those long forms too. So
Me too. So they're fun to talk about too.
Yes. Well, thank you, Gitchy Miigwech. Thank you so much for being here. Your presence is so such a blessing, and I'm just thankful to call you my friend. James Vukelich Kagagabo Miigwech.
Apajiko Miigwech. So good to see you, Gaitabik.
Good to see you too. Thank you.
Thank you so
much. We'll have you back soon.
From Minneapolis's historic West Bank, you're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul, or streaming and archived on KFAI.org. It's where community has always grown.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
What's up? This is Toolman.
And this is Bear Witness.
And we are the Hallucination.
And you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, Best Of.
The Hallucination.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Cotton cup, hitting cup game.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kadagi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. Hey, we're going to have Robert Lilligren on, a CEO of Native American Community Development Institute, on in just a few minutes, and then ending the show with Wendy with her sacred animal portion of our show that we really enjoy, and I know people out there in Turtle Island really love it. I want to talk about a couple things going on here. Of course, November 1st, we have the Gathering for Children and Returning Adoptees powwow at the Minneapolis American Indian Center, November 1st. Grand entry 1 and 7. Come on in early and support. Also, November 2nd, I want to talk about Paul Metz's 70th birthday party bash. It's a special concert for AM 950, and it's at 7 p.m. at the Esther House in Minneapolis. For more information, check out AM 950's website. And then also I want to really, a friend of mine brought this to my attention. I did see this go around Facebook and all the other formats. And what I wanted to do is just talk a little bit about Indigenous Heritage Month here in Madison, Wisconsin. So all you people that listen to us in Wisconsin on Civic Media and all the other ways that you listen, Thursday, November 6th, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m., Madison's Children's Museum at 100 Hamilton Street in Madison, Wisconsin. There's going to be an Indigenous Heritage Special from 5 to 8 p.m. And we have one of our relatives, Blue Sky Logan, and his group are going to be talking about things, Ho-Chunk, and he's a craftsman, teacher, speaker, activist, and entertainer, and singer. And Shia Schreiber, a member of Martin Falls Band of Ojibwe, will also be there presenting. And I just want to give a quick shout out to my buddy Junko, who gave me this information to bring up. Also, before we get Robert Lilligren on, I wanted to say something about what's going on here nationally and, of course, locally, too. I was blessed to be work for our nation and as a legislator for 4 years, and I had a chance to work with this person and admire him prior to his recent presidency of Ho-Chunk Nation. And as you know, that's in Wisconsin, and we're all over Turtle Island too. His name's John Greendeer, and John posted something that I'd really, really I'd like to read, and I'm going to read it. So this was posted today, and John had a heart attack, so there'll be a thing here that he says about dying, that he died, and I just want to preface that right now. And I'm going to read this real quick. This is from John Greendeer, president of Ho-Chunk Nation. They tried removing us to take our traditional homelands for their own. They fatally attacked many of our villages, brought sick upon our people, pulled our children from our homes, sterilized our women, relatives, and forced policies to assimilate us away from our traditional cultures and ceremonies. My friends and colleagues leading their tribal nations, remember that day you took office, that day your family dressed you up, and that drum sang for you, and your people sent you to the front to watch out for them? This is what they were asking of you. Quit playing the game the federal government wants you to play. They want you to snivel about treaties and their hardships so they can put their white hero cape on and save you. Let me tell you something. They would commit all these atrocities again if their disposition of dominance was ever threatened. Be kind, be prepared, but never forget that. I already died, so I ain't worried about walking on eggshells anymore. The legacy of tribal leadership has gotten us pretty far, but the fact that we are all trying to find solutions to feed our people when there isn't a food shortage should tell you this is a war that are on those in need. It always has been. My brain and body are literally corroding, protecting our grants, our healthcare, our structures, that we actually do their work out of our own time and our own dime. It's a literal clown show that leaders in governments across the country are forced to watch and reimitate ridiculous policies to preserve some humanity, decorum, and the far-gone notion of tranquility. Regardless of what they throw at us, they will still be standing as we always have been. We'll still be standing as we always have been. Those who are first affected by food share benefits, hold tight. I called out all our leaders and legislators together, and we should have something to help soon. And for you, the federal government, don't ever tell us what to do if you can't even figure out how to stay open. Our government is working just fine. And that was from our friend and President John Greendeer of the Ho-Chunk Nation. And I just want to say a big peenigie. Thank you so much, John. You know, I really appreciate your leadership, and I really appreciate you talking about this. We have been under attack for 500 years, and we do take care of our people. You know, through our own means, we have our own, medical, we have our own government. And we're a sovereign nation, like many of the 500 recognized tribes, which we all know that there's more than 500 tribes out there. And so good words from our president of Ho-Chunk Nation, John Greendeer. And I know from my short time as a legislator for Ho-Chunk Nation that there are a lot of great leaders for their people across Turtle Island. And I know that they will take heed to this and take care of their people. And that's so important too. And it's what we do as Native Americans, you know, is take care of our own. And I'm just really, really happy and blessed to be a Native American. And, you know, we're still here, the resilience, all these things that have kept us alive. You know, I am somebody's dream of 500 years ago, that resilience, that we're still here And we are the seventh generation, and we need to protect the next seven generations. And that's what we do as Native people. You know, of course we have our faults just like any other human, but this is our credo. This is what we live by. I see my grandchildren today, and it's a beautiful thing that we're able to see this day that we have grandchildren that are thriving, children that are thriving, leaders that are leading, becoming doctors, becoming lawyers, becoming just great people. For all the cards that were up against Native Americans for the past 500 years, we're doing pretty well. And by that text that President John Green Deere sent out all across Turtle Island, it says it all. We have great leaders, and we always have. And I'm just blessed to live in this time and see these great leaders. Hey, up next, we're going to talk to our friend Robert Lilgren. This is Native Roots Radio, and we'll be right back after this short message. Please stay with us.
For ancestors yet to come, we are the land. This is dedicated to our relatives before us thousands of years ago and to the 150 million who were exterminated across the Western Hemisphere in the first 400 years' time, starting in 1492.
To those who have kept their homelands and to the nations extinct due to mass slaughter, slavery, deportation, and disease unknown to them, and to the ones who are subjected to the same treatment today, to the ones who...
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Robert Pilot, and we're going to have our friend Robert Lilgren, CEO of Native American Community Development Institute, on in just a second here. I know he's been jogging and riding his bike to get here on time, and I really appreciate you. I read a big long text from our president of Ho-Chunk Nation, and it's just inspiring to hear from John Green Deere and how they're working on things and solutions. And we know we've been stacked up against for many, many years, and I don't know if you saw that. I could send it to you. It was beautiful. It was a couple minute read. But welcome, Robert Lilgren. And I want to congratulate you, Robert. You know, I don't congratulate you enough, but you won, NADCTI, Native American Community Development Institute, was honored as from the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits as an award-winning, dealy bopper. And I just want to say good on you, and well deserved.
Very kind. Thank you. Wuzhou, Robert. I think Wendy's here somewhere, so Wuzhou, Wendy as well. Always great to be here. Sorry to be late. I biked home as quickly as I could. I had another media engagement right before this, so I'm kind of a media darling today, I guess. But yeah, you're right. Our organization, Native American Community Development Institute, NACDI, was recently awarded from the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, which is an association of thousands of nonprofits in Minnesota. And at their big annual gathering recently, we were presented one of three awards they give out to nonprofits for their work. And ours was the Advocacy Award. And it was just such an honor to be recognized and to be featured at this luncheon event. And they even put together a really high quality video about our work. And that featured Make Voting a Tradition, our MBAT work, but it was really about all the work we do across the different areas. And this video is so good. I urge your listeners to look it up. So it's Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. It's NACDI, NACDI. But I will tell you, have a tissue ready, because one of our organizer canvassers that works for Make Voting a Tradition tells the story that is so moving. It brings everyone who sees it to tears.
Yeah, and I have that on AM 950 Native Roots Radio Facebook page. And again, you can look it up on YouTube. Yes, I agree, Robert. And I, you know, we talk about all the great work that's being done on the Avenue, and it's great to pause and congratulate Native American Community Development Institute for all their work. And, you know, yeah, that's why I feel it's great to have you on and all the work that you do. But I know you, your organization is very humble.
You're very kind, and I appreciate it. And we're, you know, we don't do a lot of the work. We just catalyze it to get done, and we're kind of central to it. And you get a sense of that from the video. And then I got to say a few remarks like the other two winning orgs leads did. And I said in my remarks, you know, you do this work, and it's systems change work, and sometimes it's generational work. And you can't tell what kind of progress you're making, and you can't tell if anyone even notices what you're doing. So to receive some recognition like that was really meaningful. And Marcy, who's our organizer canvasser, who tells such a moving story, you know, she talks about how engagement in this work changed her life, you know. And when you're talking systems change, you're really talking about changing one life at a time, right?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And we kind of know about a little of that change in our lives too, because I don't know, were you always thinking back in high school that you were going to be a city council member, and you were going to Brown Institute ready to do some, spin some discs?
Radio. I was bartending for 17 years, wow, of that at the High Regency, you know. I was a little landlord, and, you know, I was involved in organizing at the grassroots level, but no, becoming an elected official or a public official was very accidental. It's funny, I was just talking about this with this reporter right before this, and, you know, it was kind of accidental. And, you know, I did it to make a point about the injustices that were happening to me, my community, people like me, you know, brown people of lower wealth, and, you know, protesting the system against that. And then just how that kind of reverberated out to where I am now. I was always a big volunteer, you know, and I ran for city council back in 2001. I was serving on 8 different sort of community boards and committees and councils, mostly at the grassroots, very, very grassroots. And like any good volunteer, that was all volunteer work, right? And like any good volunteer, my reward for doing a good job was more work.
Right? Yeah. So. Well, your father must have been really proud, because after he retired from radio, and we like to talk about Chuck Lilligren every once in a while here on Native Roots Radio. I know you're your own person, but, you know, he came back into the community and taught language and was a great example to you and your family.
Yeah, I'm so proud of him. I mean, his work in early in language reclamation, you know, he sat at a number of language tables. We lived out in the northern metro, and my mom would make a big kettle of soup, you know, for these language tables. And I found out years later from some of the people who were at those tables that they always thought he made the soup. And I was like, oh, hell no, that was my mom making the soup for y'all. Even today, surprisingly, young people will come up to me and say, you know, I was at language table with your dad, and he was always so generous with his knowledge and so kind and supportive. And some of these are people who are really excelling in the language reclamation movement. But, you know, it makes me very humble.
Yeah, that's awesome. And the legacy that you're leaving, too, is amazing. I don't say this enough, but I just really appreciate you being on the show and sharing yourself, really.
It's always a pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity, Robert.
Robert, snap. That's all I'm going to say. There's a lot of craziness going on out there. But, you know, as our president, I read that thing about President Green Deer of Ho-Chunk Nation before last segment, and there's some amazing things happening here with our leaders. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we're very fortunate here in the Twin Cities to have a fairly strong organized infrastructure of the Native organizations, and many of them are service organizations, and we organize under the umbrella of the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors, or MUID, or MUD, and MUD leadership put out the alarm about, you know, SNAP benefits ending, or potentially ending, but now it looks like it's pretty much a done deal, and what are we going to do to make sure that our relatives are getting fed? And this conversation is happening in a lot of places, public sector, mm-hmm. counties here, and now, you know, we're trying to make people aware of the resources that are available and how we can come together and collaborate amongst our organizations to make sure that food remains accessible and secure, excuse me, to our relatives. Mm-hmm. And so a couple of folks, Dr. Stately, who I know, Dr. Anthony Stately from the Native American Community Clinic, and Maggie Lawrence, who leads Wakan Teepee in St. Paul, really mm-hmm. put out the call, and we started to come together. And because we have this organizational infrastructure, it's been very productive, where in our different subcommittees, or we had a whole MUD meeting, Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors meeting on Tuesday, but it's become very logistical, right? Well, one of the big things is cold storage. Well, organizations are saying, we have cold storage, you know. Some of it is distribution, you know. We can set up distribution points. Some of our elders and our families with children really can't get to a distribution point, so they may need delivery in things. And everyone's stepping into their part. And it was really rewarding, and it's a very frightening time. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's the federal government trying to control poor people by controlling their food, right? And so that's something that Native people and communities are very familiar with. You know, it's a historic strategy of colonization and forced assimilation and genocide. So, right. But we're ready. We're more ready, you know, and we're more mm-hmm. coordinated. And I think our organization, NACDI, we're not such a direct service provider, but we're excellent at communications, right? So as we assemble these strategies, that one of the roles NACDI can play is to make sure that it's getting communicated out in a good way. And then we can use our location, which a lot of people know where Powell Grounds is. That could be a good distribution center and things. So we're all stepping in. I'm really proud of the community as much as I'm afraid of what's going to happen next.
Wow. Good points. I just reminisce back to when COVID hit and everything was shut down, and the Powwow Grounds and NACDI really kicked it in. And during George Floyd, I mean, we were down there donating money, Wendy and I, and yeah. you guys had it going on. It was amazing.
Right. And we turned our art gallery into a pop-up food shelf. It was actually like a grocery store, yeah. right? And Angel Swan, who still works at NACDI, had never set that up before, but she figured it out. And it was mm-hmm. COVID, so we had to have, you know, safe and social distancing going on.
Yes.
And it looked like a grocery store. It smelled like a grocery store. And we took all the art out of our gallery, and I stored it right over here in the corner of this room for months. Jeez. But food access was disrupted for so many of our people during the riots after George Floyd was murdered. So we played our part.
Yeah. Hey, we're here with Robert Lilligren, Native American Community Development Institute, CE.
Programming on KFAI is supported by Quit Partner. Quitting smoking or vaping is easier said than done. Quit Partner offers Minnesotans no-cost resources to quit nicotine, including patches, gum and lozenges, coaching, and digital support. More at quitpartnermn.com.
Support comes from Northrop Presenting, Carl of Knutsgaard, and Glenn Cochi of Wilco. Historia, a film by John Renk, is an immersive afternoon of words, music that celebrates collaboration, craft, and friendship on November 2nd. Tickets can be found at northrop.uofm.edu.
Nation.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. This is Robert Pilot, and we are here with Robert Lilligren, Native American Community Development Institute, and White Earth Citizen, Ojibwe. Ho-wa. Good to see you again, and just a lot going on. We got, you know, I just want to, before I forget, because I know I have a limited time with you tonight, we got an election happening. Very important. Yeah. All elections are important. Let's talk a little bit about that. reverberating here that what's happening in Minneapolis all the way here in St. Paul. And I know Mayor Carter isn't a sure thing either here in St. Paul.
Well, that's what I've heard. And from this side of the river, he looks pretty strong, but I've heard that from a few other people. But yeah, it's a municipal election cycle here through our Make Voting a Tradition that you just spoke so kindly about. You know, we are very involved, and Make Voting a Tradition is more than just about getting people registered to vote and getting them to vote. It's about engagement with our political process, our public officials. You know, it can be kind of a heavy lift or an uphill climb in the Native community when historically we've been so damaged or even excluded from political processes here. And so it's, again, it's generational work, right? And so here it's a big deal. And during the even year elections, when there's lots of statewide and federal elections, there's a lot of attention that comes to our work and resources that come to our work. But in these odd year elections or off year elections that are just municipal, it's a little harder to generate that interest from statewide and national funders. But what I can tell is different this year, Robert, and I must say it's a little gratifying, is generally in these municipal, these odd year elections, there's nobody looking to support our work. And it's a bit of a chore to get the funding we need to continue this year-round work. But this year, I can tell that a lot of the sort of players who would normally fund us in even year elections are sticking with us. Mm. And the sense I get is that they're interested in supporting and sustaining the infrastructure that we have in place so it doesn't all fall apart in an odd year, and then we have to build it back up again in an even year. And there's such an awareness of the importance of the elections of 2026 that our philanthropic partners locally and nationally are still really with us. We just had a meeting yesterday morning with the Minnesota Secretary of State, Steve Simon, who's always been a huge supporter of our work. And he actually generated a national Secretaries of State Award for Make Voting a Tradition just a couple years back. A huge honor. National. Yeah. And he and one of his staff met because they understand that one of the things Make Voting a Tradition is successful at is reaching people who don't necessarily want to be engaged
in the
process. And so trying to learn from that, and you know, Native people are in a huge number, but these days when elections are won by 1 or 2%, we can be the margin of victory.
Right? And have been.
You're exactly right. So there's more and more value in engaging with us. But it's just, I'm so proud of the Make Voting a Tradition folks. They're very grassroots people, and that they're getting this kind of engagement and recognition from very highly placed office holders here.
Well, and I guess I can't really ask you on air because you're probably nonpartisan, right? We just want to get the vote out with your organization, correct?
Right. We're nonpartisan. We have to be.
Yeah.
We're a 501c3 or a nonprofit, a neutral nonprofit. We are kind of noodling the idea of creating a political nonprofit. It's a 501c4, a C4,
right.
Then we could do candidate support and issue support, but as it is. But I'm not at work, so.
Well, that's a game changer.
Whatever I want.
Yeah, well, that's a game changer because I remember an organization that I was a board member of many years turned into a 504, and it was a game changer for them. I know that, especially with the pipelines and things like that that were happening and still happening.
Right, and there's this a version, and it's a good one, in 501c3 nonprofits to stay out of political work. And there's actually a level of political work and even lobbying that's allowed, but a lot of our funders specifically prohibit that and things. But I'll tell you, in an earlier life, you know, I served on Outfront Minnesota, which is our state's largest LGBTQ organization. I was on the board there. Wow. And Outfront had a 501c3, a 501c4, and a PAC that were all under the Outfront umbrella. And they were very adept at firewalling the activities between the different organizations. And they operated under one umbrella. They had to have three different boards and things. There are requirements. But once you're set up responsibly, it's not that impossible to do. It's in some ways, and I'm way oversimplifying this, but it's like bookkeeping, right? You have to be very clear. When you're doing this, you're only doing this. When you're doing and paying for that and this or that, you're just doing those exclusive activities. But it's doable. And maybe it's because of my experience in governance of a complicated organization like that. It doesn't freak me out. I welcome the opportunity.
Yeah, you know, and that's exciting too. So let's go back to a little bit about what's happening in the community. We know nationally that there was verbiage changed and things taken off the federal websites about feeding people that we've already been taxed for. Everything's been paid for. But the regime, I should call them, the orange regime, is stopping money just to, I don't know, just to be mean to poor people in the Democratic Party. So it's help me out here.
I don't understand this mindset. But you're right, it is being mean. I mean, as best as I can tell, it's to cause pain, right? And to cause pain to don't feel that are worthy, you know, poor brown or people for the most part. But, and like I said, that's a common dynamic in the history of Native people, right? We were controlled in this way. So it feels very familiar, I feel, to me. Anyway. And then the whole point is to funnel more money to billionaires, right, to people. And you know, you got to ask, how much money do you need? What would be enough, you know? And when it's built on literally on suffering and starving people, elders, children, you know, our most vulnerable people, it's unconscionable. And they don't seem to care. They don't seem to care. And not then at all. Irony is, and I'm not a big fan of irony, but that they frame this in sort of a Christian framework, right? Yeah. They're doing the Christian thing, and that makes me even more confused.
Exactly. Well, hey, Robert Reich, who I love reading his posts, he said Amazon just announced 14,000 layoffs, and its CEO made over $40 million last year. Mm-hmm. UPS announced 48,000 layoffs, and its CEO made over $24 million last year. Intel announced 20,000 layoffs, and its new CEO pay package is valued at nearly $69 million. This is what I mean when I say the system is rigged, you know?
Totally rigged. Oh, yeah. And it gets more and more rigged under this administration. And, like I said earlier, how much money do you really need? You know, how much? And so it's this. We're in this era of incredible wealth inequality, growing wealth inequality. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you probably have this statistic at your fingertips, but it's something like 8 people in this country have more wealth than half the world combined, right?
Yeah.
Something like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, how can that even be? That is not sustainable. It's not healthy. And so
it's hoarding.
It's hoarding. Right. And then it's creating pressures and pains, right, in our communities. So something's going to happen, and our federal government is now poised to move into communities,
yes,
to use military force against our own citizens.
Yeah, and that's really becoming a thing here now, because I feel like he's lining things up for when the election happens, you know, that they're going to be military people all across the country here, and especially around voting places.
Yep, there will be intimidation, right? It's totally intimidation, and it's to keep certain people away from the polls.
So, Robert, we got only a minute or two left. I'd love if you are able to, spit out what's happening with Native American Community Development Institute this next week. I know you had a great season that ended abruptly today with the Four Sisters Market.
With our Four Sisters Farmers Market, it was just a great season. And so since it was too cold for people to be outside all day, our market manager, Destiny Jones, Ho-Chunk, made the decision to cancel. And then the vendors all hung out in the office and, you know, kind of debriefed on the season and had donuts and things. And that was really sweet. And it was just such a successful season. We have more investment in infrastructure going on in our Four Sisters Urban Farm. And the public sector funder, our county, Hennepin County, has produced additional resources at the end of the year. And so literally while I was talking to you earlier, I was signing a contract online because I want to get started next week and implementing some more. I think it's an irrigation system that they're going to install. Wow. So that's exciting. Our gallery, as you talked about, has matriarchal memory.
Yeah.
And that's an incredible show. I'd really encourage folks to get there. And I think, is it this weekend? I'm so bad. But we have a Native authors program, and I think we're in our third or fourth cohort that works with Native folks. They don't need to be professional authors or anything, but the goal is to get them to publication. And so a number of other authors there have been published. And we have an author's reading, an artist talk coming up in the gallery. Of course, with the election, it's Make Voting a Tradition is in full swing. There's going to be a huge event in our parking lot again this year on Tuesday, Election Day here in Minneapolis.
Wow. And
so I'd invite you down. It's going to be fun. And then talking with our Secretary of State here in Minnesota, Steve Simon, one of the things we talked about was how successful pop-up voting places were in the community in 2024. And so we're exploring ways of moving into more pop-ups in our urban Indian community for next year, the big election next year. So there's always stuff going on.
Yeah. Hey, and then on a Saturday, big adoption powwow. I hope to see you there. Hey, thank you so much, Robert. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
I missed Adam Beach, so I'm bummed out. I got FOMO. So, you know.
Me too.
Hey, thanks for coming on. We'll see you next week. This is Native Roots Radio, and we'll be right back.
What's up? This is Toolman.
And this is Bear Witness.
And we are the Hallucination.
And you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. Joining us right now is Sandy Whitehawk, a respected author, speaker, and a longtime advocate for Native American adoptees. Sandy has been dedicated her life to raising awareness about the impacts of adoption and foster care on Native people and helping reconnect adoptees with their tribal communities and culture. It's my really great pleasure to say ahu. Great to see you. Thank you so, so much for coming on. And we have a lot to talk about. Welcome, Sandy.
Oh, thank you, Robert. Thank you for asking me to be on your show. Your show is awesome. I don't get to tune in as much as I'd want to, but you're doing an awesome job. And how'd you get Jane Fonda?
We were at a protest, and I came up with my phone and I said, please, will you do this? And three takes later, she did it, or she got it. So it was
That's
awesome.
So cool.
Funny. Yeah. Used to have Leonard Peltier do one too for us. And But he's gotten out of prison since then because he gave his address, and you're listening to Neighborhoods Radio. Yeah, we'll have to have you do one soon, too. But I want to talk about Gathering for Our Children and Returning Adoptees Powwow first, and then yes. And we got a couple segments here. And I'm so excited to be a part of this, and it's the 19th year. Let's talk a little bit about the beginning and sure. What's happening this Saturday.
Yeah, you know, the powwow actually came about it was just conversation in the Black Hills, June 21st, 2000. We brought this, Jerry Dearley was asked by Chris Leith to make a song for adoptees because, you know, we have a song for everything, veteran songs, naming mm-hmm. songs, we just do. And I said, you know, I've been powwow dancing and I've been in all Canada and all these places and I never hear us talk about us. And we don't have a song. And I felt kind of funny talking about it to Chris because, you know, he was a respected elder and who am I to, you know, and he just goes, well, you know, there should be a song. You're right. And that's what it was about. And so he asked Jerry Dearley to make this song for us. We brought it out in the Black Hills at World Peace and Prayer Day that year in June 2000. And people came from Canada and all over the place who saw the advertisement that we were going to have this song and ceremony welcoming our relatives. When we got done, it was so moving. I came up to Jerry and Dave Chief from Pine Ridge, who was also, he was a Arvo Looking Horse's spiritual advisor. And I said, oh, you guys, I said, that was amazing. Wouldn't it be really amazing if we had a powwow and we just stopped at the pot in the middle of the powwow and we welcomed relatives back and then we went right back to dancing? And I remember Jerry goes, Sandra, if you plan it, we'll help you. And I thought, wow, okay. Well, I had not gone back and gone, okay, I want to do this now. I just stored it. Mm-hmm. And I was at NICWA and there's a social worker there, Tina Nafla, who worked at Hennepin County, who witnessed us do the ceremony at NICWA welcoming relatives. She came up, introduced herself, and said she would just like to talk to me some more. Well, we didn't talk anymore then, but she emailed me and I kept ignoring her emails because I didn't. She knows I've told this story. Because I got a bug up my butt about white social workers working in child protection. I just didn't want to talk to anybody like that. Mm-hmm. And yet Chris Leith told me one time I was at his house and I was said to myself under my breath, oh, geez, there she is again. And he goes, what are you looking at? And I said, oh, this social worker keeps emailing me about a powwow she'd like to plan, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, well, yes, we should work with Hennepin County. That's where, and so I had to get schooled and get all my junk out of the way. And mm-hmm. So in 2003, with Tina's leadership through Hennepin County, they organized that first powwow, welcoming our relatives. Had it at the Indian Center. And I was not living here then yet. And it went over well, and a couple years later, I moved here and then was offered a contract to organize this yearly event. So I started doing that. And Jackie Wilson at the time worked at the Indian Center, and so she came on board to help. And then through the years, there's been a you know, Jackie moved away for a while and then came back and Tina was always there, but we just kept doing it every year. And I wanted to do it in November because that's Adoption Awareness Month mm-hmm. and use that time to talk about. So through the years, a lot of many, many adoptees and birth relatives have traveled. A lot of local adoptees have come forward and I've been part of the ceremony and feel what's really cool is there's a part of the ceremony where we call everyone out to the center and we have a pipe, we use the song, use our jingle dress dancers. My favorite part though, is we ask the community to come out and shake their hands. And they do. And when they do, they say all kinds of things to them, like welcome home. Mm. You know, someone could be from Denver and they're actually a Lakota from Pine Ridge.
Wow.
But this community, you know, we don't have those geographic borders. You know, we're connected as relatives no matter where we are. And they might say, you know, welcome home, you know, or we're so glad you found your way. Or they say all kinds of things. Give them a hug. Mm-hmm. And so that is what validates the grief and the loss. You know, it helps fill that void of first, do they even know about me if they've not met their, you know, biological family? Mm-hmm. What do they think of me? And so it touches them in all those complicated areas of adoption. Mm-hmm. And so it's, and even those I've found through my work that adoption, many Native adoptees were placed in homes that were not safe, and they went through a lot of abuse, mm-hmm. a lot of racism. Mm-hmm. But what I've found is that, you know, there are there are a number of adoptees whose placement was very loving and stable. Mm-hmm. I'm so grateful when we get to hear that. But there's still grief and loss of identity.
Yep.
Who we are, where we come from. So love can't replace that. The only mm-hmm. thing that can replace that is our people, you know, our ceremonies, our songs. So it's just been an incredible journey. And so here we are in the 19th year of welcoming our relatives. And I'm so glad you came on board, because you got great ideas, and it'll expand and be awesome.
Well, I appreciate that. I believe I met you when Blood Memory came out, and that's a documentary about an adoptee yourself, and also really about ICWA too, and the pushback of that. I remember asking you a question too years ago. What do we do with these mothers? You know, how can we support these mothers? You know, that are giving up their children. And do you remember what you said to me?
No.
Give them the money instead of the foster
parents. Yeah. Put the money in the beginning of this if they find a family in crisis. Yeah.
It made so much sense.
Don't give the $1,500 to somebody who may end up abusing them. Give it to the mom who needs the help.
I'll never forget that. It makes so much sense. And it's like, that shouldn't be thinking out of the box. That's right in the box. And, you know, and so common sense and things like that. I really appreciate you. And you also have written a book, too. Do you want to give the title of that? That's an unbelievable book.
Sure. It's called, I always have to think because it wasn't my original title. A Child of the Indian Race, A Story of Return. Mm-hmm. And A Child of the Indian Race is in italics to show and demonstrate that it's a quotation, you know. And that's exactly how I was referred to in my adoption papers. Mm. So that, you know, said child is a child of the Indian race. So that the Minnesota Historical Society, they came together and they felt that that would make the best title.
Huh.
So
I want you too, because we get a lot of people, our Native brothers and sisters watching us on Facebook and YouTube and Blue Sky. I want you to quote yourself when a Ho-Chunk was saying, all we want is our money back. And I think I think that's something that I really want to emphasize, what you said in the book and said to this person. Could you just fill everyone in the story?
And I certainly don't want to disparage the Ho-Chunk community, because I've made awesome friends in Ho-Chunk tribe in Wisconsin who mm-hmm. were very vital. They were vital in my healing process. Yeah. But I'm at this clan meeting by invitation. They wanted to know the story, and I was going to talk with them about the very first welcome home powwow that we were going to have in Kashina. So, for those of you who don't know, that's Kashina, Wisconsin, the Menominee Reservation. And this one elder said, well, you know, when you guys come back, you're really rude. You, you know, you're disruptive. But he said rude, and all you want is per cap. That's all you're interested in. Mm-hmm. And I waited. I didn't say anything right away. And I thought, and then I said, you know, I wish I would have thought to print up the emails that I receive where people will say, my tribe gets this or that, you know, or I may be I might be eligible for land, but I don't want any of that. I just want to know who I am and where I come from. Yeah. So I told them that that's not what we need healing. And so he didn't say anything after that. And I didn't want to make him feel bad either, because I understand that, you know, we have a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Historical trauma. So, but it's true. We don't really want anything more than our name.
Yeah, it's beautiful. You know, I really appreciate that. Hey, we're here with Sandy Whitehawk, and we are talking about the big powwow this weekend and about other things too. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio, and we're going to take a quick short break. Please stay with us again, Native Roots Radio.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. I'm Bobby Wilson. Wee-cha.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting The Faint, Tuesday, November 11th. Synth-pop electro-punk pioneers, The Faint are back with deluxe editions of their previous release and their new single, Projector Project. The Faint always has something to say, and they let their music do the talking. Opening the show is Hercules and Love Affair. More information about The Faint at First Avenue is available at first-avenue.com.
Oh-ho! This is Dallas Goldtooth, and you're listening to the Native Roots Radio. Hoka Hicha! Hicha!
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
In this portion of the show, we like to bring awareness to our wolf and bear populations. Say no to the hunts.
No.
Oh.
Rawr. Rawr. Go get some picnic baskets. I guess that would be the Yellowstone bear.
Yeah, specifically. That's right.
Hey, I want to introduce my awesome, beautiful wife, Wendy. She's been an animal advocate for many years, and she's a co-founder of Native Roots Radio here in our ninth season. And you've been doing our sacred animal portion for 9 years, and I've learned so much. So yeah. Take it away.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Robert. Hey, my name is Hanaji Hihani. That means cares for them. And I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. Curtis goes by Mashke Hanajinga. I am a policy volunteer for Humane World for Animals, formerly known as the Humane Society of the United States. And I work on animal issues at the local and state level. It's always my pleasure to do that. They're doing a lot of research. The scientists out there, Robert, and researchers have now documented Alzheimer's-like disease in several dolphin species, including, bottlenose and pilot whales. In detailed post-mortem brain studies, scientists found the same two hallmark features seen in human Alzheimer's patients, beta amyloid plaques and tau tangles. These are the defining biological markers of the disease in people. Because dolphins live long lives and have complex social brains, their aging processes appears to be parallel aspects of our own. One emergent emerging theory is that older, cognitively impaired dolphins may become disoriented and inadvertently lead their pod towards shore, which could help explain certain mass strandings that have puzzled marine biologists for decades, right? The scientists have found like all these pods of dolphins washed up on the shore, and this may be one of the reasons why. The findings also raise broader questions. Is this a naturally occurring condition of advanced intelligence and longevity, or are ocean pollutants such as mercury and industrial toxins accelerating neural decline in marine mammals? Either way, it suggests that Alzheimer's may not be uniquely human. It may be vulnerability shared by large brain, socially sophisticated mammals, and it offers scientists an unexpected new window into how neurodegeneration begins and processes.
Wow. Wendy,
yeah. So what they're going
to
be.
We used to talk about dogs that might have it too.
Yeah. And they talk about doggy dementia.
Right.
You know, so yeah. So they're, what they're doing is when they find these pods of dolphins washed up, you know, the leader of the pack, you know, if it has Alzheimer's, they're looking at the brain and it's showing the, you know, biomarkers that are found in humans.
Wow.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, you know, the studies could help find ways that could help, you know, humans also, you know, so we'll have to figure out what's going on. But it is sad. My own personal theory is that I'm sure it's toxins that's causing the problems.
What did they say?
Mercury. Yeah.
And remember, as human beings, we used to have put mercury in our fillings.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
You remember that?
Yes.
I mean, I don't think I had any.
I don't have any either. I have some old fillings that need to be replaced, but
I'd leave the cabinets open and just to get you to get mad at me. But I forget sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I know.
I forget, Wendy.
Well, that's a sad story, but I have four stories that talk about animals finally getting to live free after many, many years of captivity. And I hope I have enough time to talk about all of them. And if not, I'll just bring them back on another show. Mm-hmm. So this is from World Animal News. In a groundbreaking move for animal welfare, Nova Scotia has officially approved Canada's first ever seaside whale sanctuary, marking a major victory in the fight to end captivity of marine mammals. Yeah.
Wow.
The sanctuary to be established in Port Hilford Bay will provide beluga whales with a permanent peaceful home in a natural ocean environment, far from the concrete tanks that they have been kept held captive in for years. The whale sanctuary project, WSP, will transform a sheltered cove into a refuge that is 100 times larger than the cramped enclosures at Marineland in Niagara Falls. This ocean sanctuary will allow whales to swim freely, experience natural rhythms like tides and seasons, and finally live in an environment that is resembles the wild while still receiving the care they need after years of confinement. You know, they can't be just set out to sea by themselves. They do need help from us because, you know, they don't know how to fend for themselves. But I think that that's wonderful. Yeah. And I always ask people, please boycott any marine park to keep these animals in these conditions, especially SeaWorld.
Yeah.
Yeah. Facebook friend Lucy Pato, she posts a lot of good animal stuff. He took his first breath of open ocean in 40 years and didn't look back.
Hmm.
Yeah. George, the loggerhead had lived most of his life in a tank in Argentina. He learned to swim in circles, eat from a bucket, and look at people through glass. Mm. Then came the day the gate opened. On April 11th, 2025, a boat carried him 15 nautical miles off Mar del Plata. Hands steadied his shell. The waves lifted. He slipped into the Atlantic and vanished beneath the surface. So this is a turtle I'm talking about. Yeah, what happened next feels like small miracle. In his first 70 days of freedom, George swam more than 1,700 miles.
Whoa.
Yeah.
They must have had a...
Yes, he's tagged so they could they could watch and see where he is. If he's in trouble, they can go help him, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. He hugged the coast, crossed different islands, and headed towards warm waters of Brazil. Yeah, he did what wild turtles do. He followed the currents, hunted again, and rested where the sea felt right.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
This thing he was 40 years old, did you
say?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Yep. This didn't happen by chance. For 3 years, a team helped him practice life skills he had forgotten.
Wow.
Right? They raised the salt in his pool a bit by bit so he could get used to the salt water. They swapped eggs and beef that they gave him to eat for crabs and snails.
Hmm.
They even made currents in the pool so he could learn to push through the currents.
Good on them, because these turtles can live 300 years.
Exactly. So
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org, non-commercial community-powered radio.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic, please.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic.
Oh, it's bursting.